Hey, folks, before we get to my guest this week, March 25th and 26th, I'm going to be doing stand-up just outside of Boston in Beverly, Mass. At the Off Cabot Comedy, the Cabot Theater there. Beautiful venue, beautiful, cool little town. Hope you can make it. March 25th, 26th, go to paulmercurio.com for tickets. Off Cabot Comedy.
Last night, I had a camel that stuck his foot through a plastic dish and was scared and mad that, you know, you could not take it off because he came up with all four legs and his head. So, yes, I treated camels. I know what the animals can do. So he just got a little tranquilizer, and I talked to him. He got quiet, and we ended up just cutting the thing off, and everything was fine. But that's the thing. These large animals are big, and you cannot be afraid of them. These animals know, smell, feel. I don't know how that's a sixth sense if you're afraid. And when you're afraid of these animals, you can't do anything with them.
All right. That's Dr. Pohl talking about a camel who got a plastic dish stuck on its foot. So I guess the camel was, I don't know, waitering and somehow slipped in the kitchen. I don't know. Anyway, it's so fun to have Dr. Pohl on. The guy's incredible. Obviously, that's the name of his show. No pun intended. And he's talking about how you can't have fear in dealing with large animals. And there's just so many really interesting, cool things in this conversation with him. I'm so excited to have him on. He was not able to tell me, by the way, how I can keep my dog Daisy from just the minute I put my bowl of Cheerios down on the coffee table to go get something in the kitchen. She's lapping it up. Or she literally has five different locations in our house which she can sleep on. One part of the sofa, another part of the sofa, another chair, this other chair. And how, why in God's name, when I'm in one of the four, that's the one she wants to sit in. And my wife makes me get up. If the doctor could fix those two things for me, he'd be my hero. I will put him in my will. But I can't get an answer to either of those situations with our dog, Daisy. Anyway, enjoy Dr. Pohl. I hope you guys can make it out to see me in Beverly, Mass. At the Off Cabot Comedy. And enjoy the doctor. My guest this week is... I'm a big fan of this gentleman. He's a famed veterinarian, Dr. Pohl, who's celebrating 50 years in veterinary medicine and the 20th season of his show, The Incredible Dr. Pohl, currently airing on Nat Geo Wild. And all previous episodes are available on Disney Plus. Doctor, it's great to have you on the show.
Thank you. Great to be here.
You know, you've been treating pets and livestock in rural Michigan since the 70s. You're considered a pioneer in the field. You're 80 years old, and you said, you know, you feel like you can't retire because there aren't enough vets treating farm animals. Why is that? And how do we get more vets to sort of want to focus on that area?
Well, see, the thing is not to be scared to do things. And I have taught myself to do procedures that we were not taught in school at all. And give it a try. One of my mottos is, if you don't try it, you'll never know if it works. And just in the last couple of years again, I have set broken legs on, you know, the one was a 2 month old colt, a Belgian colt, and the other one was a 2 week old standard bred belonging to Amish. And many people say, yeah, a broken leg is a dead sentence in a horse. But I set the leg and they healed up and they're doing fine. And this is the thing. If you don't try it, you'll never know if it works. So try it. And many times animals do it on their own. They help you get better fast because they are animals. They are resilient.
Now, this example of setting the leg of a colt, were you able to do that now in 2022 because it's 2022 and technology advances allow that to be possible?
Not really. It is just, you know, from what I've learned and what is possible that you can do with an animal. I do surgeries on these horses that, you know, I was not taught in college either because, yeah, I was told, do it, or, you know, something is happening. So you start doing it. And then, hey, if you have success, then you do it again. And pretty soon it gets common.
And you think that's part of the reason that it's difficult to find vets to treat farm animals? Because
yes,
they're not taught.
First of all, you have to know what these large animals can do to you. And you have to know, you know, how to stay safe. And through the years, I've learned how to do that. Now, last night, I had a camel that stuck his foot through a plastic dish and was scared and mad that, you know, you could not take it off because he came up with all four legs and his head. So, yes, I treated camels. I know what the animals can do. So he just got a little tranquilizer. And I talked to him. He got quiet. And we ended up just cutting the thing off and everything was fine. But that's the thing. These large animals are big and you cannot be afraid of them. Mm. These animals know, smell, feel. I don't know how that's a sixth sense if you're afraid. And when you're afraid of these animals, you can't do anything with them.
And there's no doubt that that animals have that sixth sense in your mind that when you talk to them and calm, it's a calming effect on them. You're really making a connection with them.
Yes. You know, I'm not an animal whisperer, but first of all, like I said, I'm not afraid of them. Mm. And just the quiet voice. And this is what I did with this camel last night. And the people were, you know, a little amazed maybe, but I never laid it down completely. It was just a little tranquilizer. And just, yeah, she I let her smell me. So she knew what I was doing. And that's the whole thing. Yeah, that animal has to know what you are before he can do anything. Never walk up to a large animal with outstretched hands because that's threatening. So you walk up to them with your arms beside your body and let them smell you. And yes, they can tell. It's like I said, the longer I work with animals, the smarter they are getting. And after 50 years, I still am amazed what I see.
So it's a little different than when, you know, I've been taught, and we have a dog. If you meet a dog on the street, you kind of put your hand out with the top of your hand toward their nose and let them smell your hand a little bit. You don't do that with a large animal. You keep your hands by your side.
That's what I do. And like for dogs, you can do the same thing. You know, and honestly, it only takes 10 seconds, then they know who you are.
Mm. And is there a common technique you use with all of these animals in addition to letting them get to know you and get familiar with you? Do you have to stand behind, not behind them, off to the side, like for whether it's a horse, a camel, a rhino?
To know the range because, yes, they can hurt you if they get scared. And this is the thing. If you're scared of them, they get scared of you.
Right.
And that's when things go wrong.
Is there a particularly challenging animal to treat just by its very nature?
Not really. You know, there are so many animals on the, you know, around in this world, but what we see is animals that are handled by humans. You know, I am not a zoo animal, so I don't work with those large animals that are, you know, wild. But I do get my share of strange pets. And there again, it's just know what you do, what you can do, and do the best you can.
And do you feel like there's something particularly in vet school now that should be taught other than, I mean, obviously the bigger point you make is don't be afraid of these animals, but and to treat them, but like, are there things that you, if you had to write up a curriculum in vet school that you feel vets so should sort of be learning that they're not learning?
What I like to see is more hands-on. You know, in college, they do a lot of work, but I don't think that the students get too much hands-on. When I graduated from Utrecht University in the Netherlands 50 years ago, we had done C-sections. We had done many surgeries on large animals, small animals. And yes, we learned how to suture on the intestines that came from the slaughterhouse. And I tell you, you have to know how to do this. So we knew how to work, how to suture before we ever got out of school. And I think this is one of the main things. Anybody can cut, but the main thing is that you have to come out doing the right thing with suturing so that you don't have open spaces. So more hands-on is what the best is. Hands-on, so you can learn under a professional that has done it for a long time, and then you get a good chance to improve from there.
Well, from what I understand, you were 12 and when you helped deliver a litter of piglets on the farm you lived in Netherlands.
Right.
And you said that just, you knew then you wanted to be a vet. What was it about that moment that hit you like a lightning bolt?
Well,
that you
the veterinarian that we had at that was a typical large animal, a big guy with big, strong arms. And my brother's pigs were just too small for his hand. So he picked me up and told me what to do. And I never thought it was dirty, you know, laying up to my shoulders with my arm in those pigs, pulling the little ones out. It was a lot of fun getting those things out alive.
Wait, you put your little 12-year-old arm like up the pig's, you know what, and pulled it out?
Up the back end of the pig, looking for little pigs inside. Yes, I was up to my neck in it. And I did think it was dirty. I thought it was just fun doing. And I come home and I tell my mom, it says, hey, you know, this is what we did. And I want to do this. I love doing this. And I still do. Nothing is as enjoyable as pulling a live animal. You know, a calf, a horse, a colt, even the C-section at the clinics. You know, when these puppies and kittens come out alive and squealing, it is so satisfying. It is just a lot of fun.
Mm. What is the hardest thing for you in your practice? Is it having to put animals down? Is it having
That never gets to be a routine, because many people come here and they've had their pets for, you know, 10, 15, sometimes 20 years. And it's been such a big part of their life. And then to let them go is so hard to do. And I feel for them because, you know, Diane and I have had in 50 years probably 13 Danes, because Danes don't live that long. And it is so hard to let them go sometimes. And this is why we have always more than one pet. Right now we have 3 dogs and 4 cats in the house. And one Dane is getting old. Charles has 2 Danes. One of his Danes is getting old. So, yes, you always have a younger animal. Basically, I say to you, so you can cry in their fur. And that's what you do. You know, just have to accept that an animal doesn't live forever.
Yeah, we adopt our dogs. We get rescue dogs. We had a great one, Rusty, a Chow Golden Retriever mix. And we had to, he suddenly developed large cell lymphoma and he went quickly. And it was rough. And then we were a month, my son and my wife and I were depressed. And then we're like, you know what, we got to snap out of this. We need another dog. And we went to the same place. And now we have our Daisy and she's a beautiful, sweet dog. But yeah, it's...
And that's the thing. You'll never get the same animal again.
Right, right.
Every animal is an individual, but that doesn't mean that you cannot love another animal the same way you loved the first one.
Right.
They're just different. And yes, you have to accept that, but you can love them just as much.
Have you ever been, maybe early on, maybe you've seen everything now, so nothing throws you, but have you ever been confronted with something that was just like, I don't know what to do here, or I never seen this before, or do you remember anything in particular? You still have that? Really?
Oh, yes. I don't know everything, but I try to find out and I want to do the best I can in order to help the animals. So, you know, if I don't know it, I look in the books. Somebody has done it before me. Veterinary medicine has been as long around as we've had animals with us. And I have a lot of old veterinary books, you know, 150 years old. And you wonder how they knew what to do in those days when they don't have the medicine that we have now. And they did it. So, yes, people have done it before me. So I just go wherever I can find it. That's why I'm not alone in the practice. We got 4 of us. And I still ask, you know, my colleagues, hey, look at this. What do you think it is? And then together we make a diagnosis, go from there.
Have you developed any techniques that are new that are, you know, sort of indigenous to you? Like, is there something that you've come up with in terms of treating an animal or?
Not really. Mm-hmm. Not really. You know, all these things, like I said, have been done before. It's just that, you know, I try to do the best I can and help as many animals as I can.
So I've got some questions that my listeners have written in. A lot of people are excited that I was having you on. So I'm just going to ask you a few questions. It's, none of them is diagnosis or anything, but these are questions. One is, Jamie asks, wants to know why his dog spins in circles until he settles on a spot to do his business. I've been curious about this. I understand it's orientating to the magnetic pull of something, but I don't know. You tell me.
Yeah, I don't know why they circle like that. And the dogs do the same thing when they want to lay down. Many times they circle a couple times. I think what it is that they make sure that there's nothing in their bed when they want to lay down that pokes them in their side. So they just look around and walk around and clean it up so that it's nice and smooth, and that's when they lay down.
Okay. Mary McPartland, her grand, wants to know, she has a box turtle, Fred, who's 4, and she's had him since he was a baby, but he lost a digit in 2 of his legs recently. Why would that be?
I don't know. Mm-hmm. You know, circulation, like I said, when I don't see the animal, it's very hard to make a diagnosis. You know, even we get so many phone calls also. What do you think of this? Without seeing the animal, you can't say much.
Right.
Could be injuries. You know, a boxer will do a lot of running, and I've seen it where the nail comes off, and then you get a nail bed infection, then it goes into the first joint, and yes, then you have to take that toe off in order to keep him healthy again. So it all depends what happened.
Liz asks, as cows have been bred to produce more and more milk, have the changes resulted in more health issues for cows?
Not really, because the nutritional science has been improved so much that, yes, you know, we've thought of bred the cows to give more milk, but we actually feed them more and make sure that all the vitamins and minerals are there too, and that's how they stay healthy. So it's the nutritional science that has done great strides forward to help these animals.
Why is it that larger animals, Philip asked this question, why is it that larger animals don't live as long? Like you mentioned, your Danes, and I know other large dogs don't live as long as smaller dogs. Why is that?
I was told that it's because it's a man-made breed. The smaller the animal, it seems like the more, yes, they were attuned to nature. Well, you know, we made bigger breeds, different breeds. And it seems like when we make a breed like this, that their longevity decreases. Danes are a man-made breed. They've had, you know, through the ages, they've been there. But it was not like the wild dogs that you see and that, you know, can live quite a longer time if they're taken care of. So yes, it's the larger dogs, for some reason or other, that don't have the longevity. Why? I don't really know.
Mm. So Maddie asks a question. She has a cat, and cat's been great, but in the last 6 days, she's been scratching and peeing a lot on my carpet. Why would that be, and how do I stop her from doing that?
Well, that sounds like she has to take it to the veterinarian and do a urine check and see if there's anything wrong there. That sounds like almost a urinary tract infection.
Oh, because they can't just control it. And yeah, that makes sense. Someone asked, have you found, you obviously find yourself in dangerous situations sometimes. Is there someone that stands out? Dries asks, what's the most dangerous situation you found yourself in with an animal?
That was many, many years ago, and I still remember that. We still had to test cows for TB, and this gentleman had a bull in a pen, and he was a Holstein bull, kind of big, and he had a ring in his nose, but he was mean, and I had to get in the pen to inject him with the tuberculin, and they couldn't hold him. And I just made it over the gate, over the fence in time. And actually, he helped me a little bit, and my boot came off. And that was one of the closest ones that I say, oh, yes. Otherwise, no. Otherwise, you know, you try to stay safe. You try to stay close to the fence, that you can hop over the fence if you have to. But look the animal in the eye, and you know what they're doing. And in a case like this, I was behind the animal. I couldn't see what was going on, but I made it.
That's good, because we need you around.
Yes.
Is there something that, you know, you've wanted to do? I mean, you're doing a TV show now. You've got a crazy schedule, obviously. So what do you do to shake off a rough day? Like, as someone's asking, Agatha, what does Dr. Pohl do to shake off a hard day at work? Like, how do you, I know you have a car collection. Like, what do you do to relax?
Not too much. No, basically you come home and we have a St. Bernard that we rescued, and he's now about 200 some pounds.
Wow.
And when you come home, these animals are happy that you're home. And then you just sit down, have a cup of coffee, and talk to the animals, and pet them, and relax that way. And I think this is what is so important for people, that, you know, animals are there for us, and we are there for the animal, but we benefit both.
Yes. Yeah, that's so true. The show developed in an interesting way. Your son was making in the entertainment business and wanted to do a documentary on you. And then that got pitched. But you had a great quote. You said, I asked him, your son, who he thought might be interested in watching an old man who speaks with a funny accent, putting his hand up the back end of a cow.
Yes, exactly right. You know, who knew? But the whole secret is, I think, that this show is real. Mm-hmm. What you see in this show is real, and especially kids. And, you know, we've had so many. Well, the youngest one was 17 months old and recognized me and grinned and gave me a fist bump. The kids know whether it's real or not. And I think this is what makes it so popular, that what you see is real. Nothing is made up for TV. And I think kids especially can tell the difference.
Do you feel self-conscious when the camera is on in terms of, you know, how you behave, interact?
No. I don't even know when the camera is on many times, because now with this COVID, they work with remote cameras.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, they're sitting in their own little room with the joysticks manipulating the cameras. So, you know, we don't even know sometimes when you're being filmed. But the same people have come back for 10 years. One of the main cameramen has been here from the very start, and they all come back. So they're like family. And they know what we do. They know what to be sometimes. So, no, I don't even look at the camera. The camera is there secondary. The animal comes first.
Just as we finish up, is there anything you're seeing? Is there a trend of a malady in farm animals that's alarming to you as anything? I mean, I know things develop and then things get treated, but do you see anything currently sort of happening to farm animals that concerns you medically?
No, not really. We, in Michigan here, we have eradicated brucellosis. In the area where I live, also tuberculosis has been eradicated. So in that way, we have improved quite a bit, and it's a lot healthier for us to, you know, drink milk or anything like this, because those bad diseases have been brought under control. Not much news coming on. Yes, we have COVID now. COVID has been in animals, but it doesn't stay there. And the main thing is, yes, we have done a tremendous progress in the nutritional science for animals. And that is for cows, horses, dogs, cats, and everything. And I think that has made a big change in keeping the animals healthy.
Interesting. Well, listen, it is so great to have you on and to meet you. My family is a big fan. I wish I could meet you in person. I can't say I'd shake your hand, because your hand's been up a lot of butts. But
Well, you can shake my right hand. It's medium and left hand. It gets dirty.
The show is The Incredible Dr. Pohl. It's on Nat Geo Wild and Disney Plus. It's great to have you on, and best of luck, and keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you.
All right, there you go. That was Dr. Pohl. I could talk to him all day, and I just think he's doing important work, because fewer and fewer people want to care for farm animals as vets, so they're going to be a shortage for sure. Anyway, hope to see you guys at Off Cabot Comedy March 25th and 26th, and you can go to portalmercurio.com for tickets, and we'll see you guys next week. Thanks.